The inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, hello everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds Have Changed. This is Father Tom Coyes, your usual Wednesday brain wrinkler, but stepping in here on Thursday. If you are listening live on WNDZ or WSFI, 950 AM or 88.5, glad to be with you. We're going to have a very brain wrinkling show today. It's a challenge for sure, because there was a movement in Ohio, just
I am the gift.
Week. Yeah. Anyways, there was a vote just on Tuesday, and we have someone here who's been following that issue, that case, pretty closely. We have with us Michael New. Michael New, can you hear me well?
Yes, very well. Thank you.
Hey, good to have you. Michael is from my alma mater. You're in Staunch, at the Catholic University there in Catholic U, eh? Is that still true?
Yep, that's correct. I teach economics to our business students at Catholic University. I've been here since August of 2018, so over 5 years.
How about that? Well, I lived at Theological College there for 3 years, and had some really good philosophy teachers. And anyways, I'm grateful for that great school. Michael, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you've been following, what was going on in Ohio, and we'll just catch us up with the basics.
Yeah, sure. That, just kind of circling back, we obviously, pro-lifers scored a great victory last year with the Dobbs. Getting Roe v. Wade overturned was a long-term goal for us, and we succeeded. And the other side is pushing back. And one way they're doing that is through direct democracy. They're bypassing the legislative process to try to put abortion rights in state constitutions. They've succeeded, sadly, in doing that in states like Vermont and California and Michigan. And this year, 2023,
Mike, sorry to interrupt there. Explain that a little bit more basically. What do you mean they succeeded in putting in laws? They're circumventing the electoral process?
I would say the legislative process. Essentially, that some states have direct democracy, where, if you have some kind of an idea and you collect enough signatures, you can put it on the ballot directly for people to vote on. And, not every state has this, but many do. And in 2022, supporters of legal abortion collected signatures, and they allowed citizens in some states, including California, Vermont, and Michigan, to basically cast a vote on a constitutional amendment that would put legal abortion in the state constitution. So essentially, this was not passed by a legislature. This was direct democracy, where people can kind of vote on things directly. So
I think I want my listeners to realize that it takes the Supreme Court out of the picture. The Supreme Court was saying with kind of Dobbs, "Hey, it's not our department; it's up to the state legislators." And so now the legislators are saying, okay, we're going to make it a law. We're not going to make it ambiguous at all.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, and again, I think, you know, there is a role for, you know, direct democracy, but I don't necessarily think that you should let majorities of people amend a state constitution. You know, constitutions are important. You know, they safeguard individual rights. They're hard to change once they are amended. So I think that if you want to amend a state constitution, it should require a pretty high threshold. It should not be just 50% plus one. It should be a bipartisan, you know, at least get bipartisan support. It should be thought of as an idea that has broad public support. So
yeah, that's what they call a supermajority, right?
Right, correct. So essentially, you know, in 2023, this is where we are now, there's efforts to put legal abortion in the Ohio state constitution. And that's going to be on the ballot in November. And one thing, you know, people are pro-life like me want to do is, you know, protect the constitution, make it harder to put legal abortion in the state constitution. So this past Tuesday, there's an election that would increase the threshold for constitutional amendments. Instead of 50% plus one, we wanted to raise it to 60%. And that would, again, just show that any time there's a proposed constitutional amendment, it would enjoy a broad consensus, that a supermajority of people would think this is a good idea in order to pass. You know, again, you know, the U.S. Constitution is hard to amend. You know, you need two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate, and three-fourths of the state legislatures. It's only been amended 27 times since our country's founding. The Ohio Constitution has been amended, you know, hundreds of times, and I don't think that's a good model. So that's kind of where we were. We wanted to just make it a little more difficult to amend the state constitution to make sure that if there was an amendment, it enjoyed kind of broad support, a supermajority.
Yeah. It's kind of giving a nod to past generations that they've built a good foundation, and we shouldn't play with the foundation so easily, if you use an architectural analogy.
Right. So, you know, essentially, so there was a vote on Tuesday, and unfortunately, we didn't succeed. You know, we needed to get to 50%. It looks like we got about 43%. You know, pro-life and pro-family groups, you know, did work hard. You know, we raised money, we ran ads. There was a rally on Sunday which featured Abby Johnson, featured Bishop Strickland, it featured Jim Caviezel. So people did work hard, but we did not get the outcome that we wanted. It's a disappointment. It's a setback. It's not devastating. The status quo prevails. And, you know, just means in November, we have to work hard in Ohio to defeat this abortion amendment. You know, it's going to be difficult. It is polling well. But one thing we know from research is that when things are put on the ballot, they tend to lose support as the election draws near. So right now this is polling between 53 and, say, 57%. But the election is, you know, more than 2 months away. In fact, it's probably about 3 months away. So we have time. You know, we don't have unlimited time, but I don't think we should despair. You know, I think that, you know, we need to make strong arguments against this proposition. You know, I think that what our opponents are proposing is pretty radical. It would very likely make abortion legal in Ohio throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. You know, people tend to reject late-term abortions. It would very likely repeal the state's pro-life parental involvement law that requires that minor girls at least notify their parents before obtaining an abortion. That's in jeopardy. It might also require the state Medicaid program to start covering abortions. And that would mean that Ohio taxpayers would have to start paying for abortion with their taxpayer dollars. So there's a lot of very good arguments that we can, you know, launch against this. You know, we don't need to despair, but we do need to work hard. You know, I think this will have national implications. If people support legal abortion and kind of win in a conservative state, you know, keep in mind Donald Trump carried Ohio twice. They're going to try this in other conservative states. They might try it in Missouri or Arizona or Florida. So this, you know, what's happening in Ohio in November will have national implications.
Yeah, of course, it'll be a model that they will say is succeeding. And you know what I got to throw in? I I want us to appreciate the time in history in which we live. To me, Michael, that we're at the same crossroads as America was just before the Civil War. The issue of slavery was such a controversial issue that the brains in Washington, even including Abraham Lincoln, wanted to sidestep the issue. In other words, those Missouri Compromise, the Compromise of 1850, were all designed to kick the can down the road. And it was hoping that the issue would go away. The obviously slavery issue did not go away, and the Civil War began. I really sense a similar attitude, atmosphere regarding this, that the Supreme Court and Dobbs did almost identical what the Missouri Compromise or the Compromise of 1850 did regarding slavery. And we know it didn't solve it. It's too right. deep of a moral issue.
You know, right. And I mean, I think, you know, that's a good analogy. I mean, we do have a kind of a system of federalism, you know, which I think can sometimes, you know, I mean, obviously with something like slavery or abortion, you know, these are obviously horrible human rights violations, and, you know, humans deserve rights, whether regardless of their skin color, regardless of whether they're born or unborn. But, you know, you are right, that essentially that, you know, the Supreme Court's decision did, you know, kind of inflame this issue. It is kind of going to the states. You know, good things have happened since Dobbs. I mean, we do have protections in place for preborn children in about 14 states. But it's also created, you know, a lot of polarization on this issue. And, yeah, it's going to be tough to see this being resolved. I think we're in for, you know, a very, very long fight. But at the same time, none of us signed up for the pro-life movement because we thought it'd be easy. You know, I mean, our opponents, we're not ever going to roll over and play dead. You know, we need to conduct ourselves with charity and with diplomacy, but we need to make, you know, good, strong arguments. And also we need to, you know, be of service. You know, elections are important, but there's plenty of things we can do to build a culture of life. We always need to support our pro-life pregnancy help centers. I mean, they're on the front lines every day trying to help, you know, pregnant women in need. You know, we need to educate our friends and our peers. Everybody needs to pray. You know, again, I think that, you know, the elections are certainly important. Public policy is important. But it's not the only thing we do. And it's important that people see that, you know, pro-lifers are compassionate and we're always eager to help mothers and pregnant women in need. And, again, I think it's important to really just pursue a multifaceted approach.
Yeah. I'm sure you're aware of what was going on in Illinois this past week as well. Our governor signed a law giving the state's attorney, I think it's a guy, Kwame Raoul, or that might be a woman. I wish I knew, but I can't tell by names these days. Anyways, Governor Pritzker signed a law that allowed the state's attorney to sue, bring to court any crisis pregnancy center that was giving ladies misinformation, deceptive. The rule was called, the Deceptive Practices of Limited Service Pregnancy Center Act. The Deceptive Practices of Limited Services Pregnancy Center Act. Thanks to the Thomas More Society, which I would imagine you're well aware of.
Yep.
A lot of our Chicago people know a guy by the name of Peter Breen. He initiated a temporary injunction against this.
Wow.
The day after he signed it.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is. And the judge that Peter Breen was talking to, who was trying to get the injunction, a judge by the name of Lane Johnston, or could be Ian Johnson. I don't know if that's an L or an I. It's crazy, isn't it? But that judge, after Peter Breen asked for the injunction, said the bill before us here is painfully and blatantly a violation of First Amendment rights. And he slapped the injunction on. So we got a little breathing room, but they're going to keep trying to push it. Obviously, an injunction is only a temporary matter. So we'll see where that goes.
Right. Actually, you know, Peter's a friend of mine, and I actually helped out with that case. I did file an expert brief and an expert report, I should say, that, you know, a lot of what the other side claimed was, you know, wrong or misleading, you know, it turns out is accurate, or at least is up for legitimate debate. So I was happy to help out with that. But I think it's just really sad that we even have to fight these sorts of things. You know, I would think that even people support legal abortion should support pregnancy help centers. I mean, if people want to help support organizations that help pregnant women in need, that should be completely and totally, you know, non-controversial. You know, I really think it shows how radical and how misguided, you know, a lot of our opponents really are if they're really trying to shut down or harass or hamstring organizations that are doing their best to help pregnant women in need. You know, they offer a nice range of services. Some have maternity homes. Many offer counseling. You know, many offer different kinds of financial support for women. So, you know, pregnancy centers are on the front lines every day, helping women in need. Anytime I give a talk to a pro-life audience, I always encourage attendees to find a local pregnancy center and help them even a little bit. Sometimes a little goes a long way. And again, I just think it's just tragic that, especially in many politically liberal states, they're being subject to this kind of you know, criticism, this kind of scrutiny, and there's just legislative efforts to hamstring them.
Indeed. I want to take a little different twist, too, to this issue. But let's take our first break. Okay,
sure.
Nick, you can stay with us, right, Michael?
Sure, of course.
Very good, very good. Let's take our first break. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You're listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are 88.5 FM WFSI. And WNDZ, 7:50 a.m.
You are invited to attend the Father Tom Art Show, inspiring faith in God through beauty with Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes, Sunday afternoon, August 13th, from 2 until 4. You'll enjoy original art by both priest artists, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes. Stroll through the different galleries featuring original art, while also enjoying a light summer sangria wine and cheese buffet. Learn how beauty can lead to a deeper longing for the divine artist. Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4, August 13th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 South Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Co-sponsored by Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church and the Sag Bridge Mission Society.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear winds of change over the air, what with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear winds of change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. Or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link.
Hey, I think that's my sign to start talking again. We have with us a guest from Washington, the great campus of Catholic University of America. We always used to call it the real Catholic University in Washington because, you know, there's another famous Catholic University in Washington that we like to compete with, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Sad to say. Anyways, that's my days. Gee, I graduated in 1979. That's a long while ago. Okay. So I want to take a little turn. Michael is here with us, dear listeners, because Ohio had an election on Tuesday, and on the ballot was to ask the population, should it be easy or hard to amend the state constitution? The issue that was on the ballot was, let's make it a 60% threshold in order to change the constitution instead of a 50 plus one. But the people voted to keep it at 50 plus one. You surprised me when you said that the Ohio constitution has been changed so many times. Over 100, did you say?
Yeah, certainly hundreds. I think that, my calculations indicate it's almost nine times as long as the U.S. Constitution. So, yeah, it's been hundreds of times.
Yeah. So here this one. And you can see why the political voices that want to enshrine the abortion right as a right, as a new human right, which is often described as. I have often used the analogy, Mike, do you remember seeing the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, where our hero was in a cave and he had to steal a little idol that was on a pedestal that was booby-trapped, and he takes out a bag of sand, and he has to be very careful to take the idol and put the bag of sand right on the pedestal so that the censors will not know that the idol was stolen. And when a wonderful Catholic writer by the name of Timothy Gordon uses that picture to describe the way natural law has been replaced by silly law or made-up law. This is a perfect example. You can't possibly defend the idea that the right to kill your offspring is a natural law. It's a natural right. It's following natural law. And that's our society today is oblivious to the difference between laws based on nature and laws based on I'm not sure what to call it. Based on feelings, based on popular vote, based on popular hungers, desires.
Yep. Based on whim, you know.
Based on whim.
Yep.
That's a good one. Here, I want to share a little an article by How to Derail a Civilization. How to Derail a Civilization. It's from a website called El Gato Malo, the bad cat. He says this, one of the surest ways to lose a game is to play against an opponent who can think more moves into the future than you can and who orchestrates a deep game on timescales that are in excess of your consideration. You'll see small moves and fail to grasp their significance. You may even think you're gaining advantage, when in fact, your one more look ahead is about to get you into serious trouble against someone who has already mapped out the nine next moves. It gets doubly dangerous when playing against someone who has a fuller or stronger concept of the game than you have. At a certain point, you're not even in the game at all. This gets hopelessly magnified by the fact that those who only think one move ahead or in first order effects are rarely good at conceiving of others who can do such things. they tend not to believe in it, then they lose and call it bad luck, because it's easier than realizing how badly you were outplayed. That's kind of a good little analogy, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, as someone, I do play chess from time to time. I'm not a great player, but you know, if you're playing someone who can think several moves ahead of you, yeah, chances are you're probably going to lose that chess game. And I think that that's true with a lot of life. I think that, you know, we need to think, you know, long term, you know, that obviously your action is going to prompt a reaction, and kind of seeing how things will play out, you know, in the extended future is certainly wise. So I think that that commentary is very, very astute.
Yeah. And I will throw out the idea that looking at the big game, looking at the long range, is to include something that seems obvious to me but doesn't seem obvious to many, and that is that the abortion issue is very intertwined, connected with sexual morality. If there was a recovery of a stronger sense of moral principles in the whole man-woman relationship, the whole area of our romantic relationships, we'd get to a deeper root of the right to life issue, without stepping back and seeing the connection between those two things. We are just playing one step at a time, you know, one
right
at a time.
Right. I think that a lot of pro-lifers forget that. I mean, one thing is important is changing the culture. And one thing I tell a lot of pro-life audiences is that a promiscuous culture is never going to support strong limits on abortion or strong protections for pre-born children. And if we could make the culture more chaste, we would win. You know, essentially, if you know, sexual activity was confined to marriage, and you know, there would be much, much, much fewer in the way of unintended pregnancies. There'd be fewer abortions, and it'd be, you know, much easier to pass good, solid pro-life laws protecting preborn children. So, you know, I do think, you know, we have to change the culture. It's not going to be easy. You know, I think that, you know, frankly, the availability of contraception has really corrupted the culture. It's made it more promiscuous. It's made it much easier for men to walk away from women they've impregnated. So we have our work cut out for us, but I certainly agree. We do need to change the culture in order to really, really start protecting, you know, preborn children.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons why I bring up that angle, that connection, that long game, the big picture, I heard on one of the radio programs that I like to listen to, and just usually the Christian conservative talking heads, which make a lot of sense a lot of times, but they were debating Ann Coulter's, either an article or a tweet or posting, whatever it is these days, and I've always been a fan of Ann Coulter. She's a wise and a very good Christian person. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure she's Catholic. Anyways, Ann Coulter was expressing the opinion, here goes another state vote post-Dobbs that went the pro-choice way. She was lamenting the fact that Republicans in general, as they work on their strategy, have to wake up and see we won't win any Republican races unless we move away from the right to life issue. Don't bother people with it. I'm afraid that she's mimicking the stand of the pro-slavery people who are trying to say, just keep quiet about slavery. Don't muddle the waters. You know, even when Abraham Lincoln was doing his favorite debates, famous debates with Stephen Douglas, wasn't saying, he wasn't saying, I'm for slavery. He was just saying, let's stay out of it. Let it alone. And again, as I say, that it couldn't be left alone, even though we try. I just can't help but feel we're reliving that same kind of dilemma, political and moral, and spiritual, social, and all that. So your comments on any of this?
Well, I think, you know, Ann Coulter's wrong. You know, I don't think, you know, we shouldn't pursue what I call the ostrich strategy of putting our heads in the sand. You know, that we have good arguments. You know, we can articulate those arguments. You know, direct democracy campaigns aren't really easy for us for a variety of reasons. I mean, we know that money plays a big role in who wins and who loses. And, you know, one thing I point out is that, you know, unborn children don't pay pro-lifers to protect them. But sadly, abortion is a multi-billion dollar industry in this country. So our opponents typically have more money to spend than we do. And keep in mind, I mean, our opponents, by and large, are kind of taking the fight to us. I mean, they're the ones putting amendments on the ballot to, you know, put abortion in the state constitutions. And as pro-lifers, you know, we have to fight back. You know, we just can't shrug our shoulders and let our opponents win. You know, when these things do show up on the ballot, you know, we need to be engaged. I mean, as good Catholics and good Christians, we need to take part in the process. We need to do what we can, you know, whether it's giving money, whether it's phone banking, whether it's going door to door, you know, whatever skills and talents one has, you know, we need to, you know, engage this issue. So, you know, I don't think we should just, you know, give up or, you know, throw our hands in the air. You know, I think sometimes we do need to make prudential judgments here and there about, you know, which, you know, battles to fight. But when these things show up on the ballot, no matter what state it is, we need to fight back. So, again, I think that, you know, and I don't think that, you know, Ohio is an impossible state for us to win. You know, I think it is a more conservative state than Michigan. It is certainly more conservative than Vermont and California. You know, I think we do have some good arguments that we can make during this campaign. So I never counsel for despair. You know, I think we need to be happy warriors. You know, we're not going to win all the time. We're going to have aggravations and setbacks sometimes. But, you know, our cause is a good one, and we just need to keep being engaged.
The question, I think, and Coulter, and actually some of our listeners will know the name Mike Gallagher. He was talking about this morning on the radio. A good pro-life Christian Republican, I guess. I'll give that nomenclature to him. And he was saying, yeah, we're not going to make any progress if we keep losing elections. So We have to put this issue aside in order to win elections. The question I think that they have to answer, or he has to answer, well, is would that strategy not more deeply cement pro-abortion legislation and make it even harder for the right to life people to succeed, that it will get more instanced and established? That's what I fear.
Right. I mean, we still have to engage this issue. And keep in mind, I mean, the other side is kind of taking the issue to us in a way. I mean, we just can't ignore them. They're not going to go away. Again, it was pro-abortion people that are putting this amendment on the ballot to put abortion in the Ohio State Constitution. So, again, it's up to pro-lifers to combat it. You know, now what position should Republican candidates take? You know, here and there, that can be, I think, a prudential issue in some cases. I mean, there are some states where there is strong support for legal abortion.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
You know, some candidates may need to be sensitive to that. But I think when it comes to these ballot propositions, again, when the other side is trying to put abortion in your state constitution, you know, we have no choice but to oppose it and oppose it strongly. So, I do think that, you know, we saw a lot of pro-life people do well for the last election cycle. Governors who signed strong pro-life laws won. Governor Mike DeWine in Ohio won by a large margin. Governor Brian Kemp in Georgia won by a large margin. Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida won by a large margin. Governor Greg Abbott in Texas won by a large margin. So these governors all signed strong pro-life laws, all faced, you know, professional, well-financed opponents, you know, and all won by pretty big margins. So, you know, again, it's not necessarily a loser for us. I mean, direct democracy poses challenges, but, you know, they're not insurmountable challenges. And we even saw elections post-Dobbs where strong pro-life candidates, strong pro-life governors did win. So, again, neglecting or ignoring this issue is not a solution, not a strategy.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, I'm going to take another little turn, a different angle at this whole issue by asking us to consider the difference going on in the higher echelons of Catholic moral theology.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
This is the bigger question, well, a different part of the big question. And what's going on in what John Paul II set up as called the John Paul II, the Pope John Paul II Institute on family and life, I guess. There's been a lot of upheavals going on there. I'm sure you're aware of some of that. But let's take our next break. We're at the bottom of the hour, sort of. So, Nick, let's take our bottom of the hour break, and let me tell our listeners that I am Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ AM 750.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in with the Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyes here. I'm with Professor Michael New from Catholic University. You are a lawyer as well as a teacher of economics?
Nope, I don't have a law degree. My background's a little bit complicated. My PhD is actually in political science, but it's very quantitative. I have a PhD in political science from Stanford, also a master's degree in statistics. And if you do quantitative social science, you can teach undergrad economics. And I just kind of saw the job market for economists was better than the job market for political scientists. A lot of Catholic schools have trouble finding economists with a good technical skill set. So I've taught economics at Ave Maria University in Florida, and I've been here since 2018 at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America.
Oh, excellent. You know, I'm reading in one of my little book clubs Henry David Thoreau's Walden Pond. And he's a very interesting figure because I've always kind of thought him to be just sort of the laissez-faire naturalist who just was interested in soaking up the beauty of nature and appreciating God's creation around him. But as I'm reading Walden Pond, he definitely gains points in my book by saying in America, and this is young America in the 1850s, he was critiquing America already by saying our progress, our success in building beautiful houses, new machines, great industrial progress is making us Americans economic tools, and we're losing the essence of what human life is supposed to be about. So I applaud him in that. But then he goes to great lengths in just talking about the economics of building his little house on Walden Pond and how he gets away with so much that he does for so much less money. He's like so proud that he, instead of going into town to buy a chair for $3, he can go into the forest and cut down a tree and make a chair for 45 cents or something. So he's pointing out a good problem that we shouldn't consider our lives economic machine. We are not like the communist, socialist, communist essence of man. It's all economics. There is an element that is the spiritual, putting the economics as a means to a higher end. I like that. Ralph Waldo Emerson is another one of the transcendentalists of the 1800s, but this David Henry Thoreau, who wrote Walden Pond, he was criticized by a future Catholic priest who lived with him or hung out with the transcendentalists, a priest by the name of Isaac Hecker. Isaac Hecker left that group of, shall we say, transcendental idealists because he said, these guys were spending too much time with their head in the clouds, and they let all the women do the work, and they didn't know a thing about farming, which they should have studied.
Yep.
It's a strange little twist to our pro-life program here, but you being an economist, I'm sure I would imagine you teach your students that economic success can and should be linked into our understanding of the fullness of the human person. And a rich person may not be a better person than a poor person.
Yeah, right. Essentially that, economics is important, but it's important that the economy is here to serve the people. The people aren't here to really serve the economy. And, one thing we really do at the Catholic University of America, especially in the business school, is we really do try to integrate, the Catholic faith with how we teach economics. And, we are very much interested in the economics of the family. And you aren't really going to have a properly functioning market economy, without strong families. The family is really the building block of society, and it's really important that public policy kind of, help the formation, of strong families. So, I have a colleague, Kathy Pakalik, who helped hire me here at CUA. She does a lot of work on the economics of contraception. She's a mother, she has children, she's very much kind of interested in kind of fertility and the economics of fertility. I do a lot of writing and research on kind of sanctity of life issues and abortion and kind of the social science behind that. I write about abortion trends, pro-life laws, contraception programs, public opinion. Mm-hmm. I joke that I'm lots of fun at cocktail parties. But, we really need to have, families really need to be first. And again, you're not going to have a functioning market economy without strong families.
Sure seems logical to me. Let me do this little twist with the problem that I think is going on within the elite theologians and philosophers of Catholicism with a special attack or ignorance of, ignorance in the best sense and an attack on the worst sense, of John Paul II's amazing encyclical Veritatis Splendor. I really think all Catholics should appreciate the depth that that was. I remember when it came out and I read it, and it was just what it was needed to sort of counteract some of the more sloppy moral theologians that were just plugging proportionalism and consequentialism. But now what's going on in Rome, there's a new director for that institute, I guess you can call it, in Rome. There's an archbishop by the name of Victor Manuel Fernandez. He says this, it's quoting about him, it is made clear through his words and his deeds that Archbishop Fernandez has little use for Veritatis Splendor. In one of his recent interviews, he conveyed his dismissive view of that encyclical because its particular concern is to set certain limits. Hence, according to Archbishop Fernandez, it is not the most adequate text to encourage the development of theology. Your comments, Michael?
I'm not really a trained theologian, so I'm not sure I have a real lot to add to what you just said. I kind of stick with the things I know about, which is, economics and, trying to how I can use kind of the skills I have to help build a culture of life.
Sure, fair enough. Since I brought it up, I want our listeners to appreciate this ties into the criticism I was making of Ann Coulter's assessment of the loss in Ohio this past week. Because what he's essentially saying is that John Paul II's Veritatis Splendor isn't helpful because it sets limits, and it uses a phrase, he says this somewhere else along the line, it uses the phrase intrinsic evil. And he wants to get rid of the idea that there can and should be taught that there are certain things that are intrinsically evil. He sees that as the problem. Mm-hmm. And what I think we will not recover, shall we say, the moral compass that is necessary in the general culture to turn the right to life into a real right, and the right to abortion be seen as a fake right, a counterfeit right, you had a good phrase, like a whim.
Yep.
A right of our whims, our feelings. If our higher theologians in the Catholic world are trying to say that setting some limits is the problem, then obviously more and more infractions will happen. Mm-hmm. There has to be some point where we say, I cannot do that. And you shouldn't do it. And if you did do something that is intrinsically evil, you immediately say, I'm sorry, I did wrong, I apologize, I'm going to repent, I'm going to renew my efforts to do right and teach right and all the rest. I really think it's somewhat connected to the problem that a lot of people have in not understanding the redeeming characteristic of repentance. I wonder, there's just a stubbornness to not say I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that leads to a more stubborn attitude about something that seems obviously wrong, mm-hmm. Goodness. I think we need to take our final break here.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
I want to relate it to the radio show I had yesterday. I touched on this priest, who was the founder of the Paulist congregation, right centered there, right at Catholic University. Their building was right behind Theological College, where I lived. And I just want to touch on one of the issues in his life, which caused a great crisis, which I will describe as the crisis that we're passing through today in many people's minds and hearts, that needs to be addressed and needs to be appreciated. That is the issue of infallibility within the church. That's what caused a great crisis in Father Hecker's life, and I think it's causing problems today for so many. Okay, so let's take our final break. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You're listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ 750 AM.
You are invited to attend the Father's Tom Art Show, inspiring faith in God through beauty with Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes, Sunday afternoon, August 13th from 2 until 4. You'll enjoy original art by both priest artists, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes. Stroll through the different galleries featuring original art while also enjoying a light summer sangria wine and cheese buffet. Learn how beauty can lead to a deeper longing for the divine artist. That's the Father's Tom Art Show with both artist priests, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyes. Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4, August 13th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 South Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. The Father's Tom Art Show is co-sponsored by Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church and the Sag Bridge Mission Society.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for staying with us. And a special thank you to Michael New from Catholic U. I like saying that. Michael, the one thing I'm going to try to just share with the audience, and I do want to wrap it into your expertise, your study of economics, and the way moral principles need to be wrapped around the way we do business, the way we do economics, and yet get the right priorities right. The thing I referred to before that break was when Father Isaac Hecker was told in no uncertain terms by his superior he was not to use, or he was not to work with non-Catholics. His assignment was just to preach to Catholics. He was having success with non-Catholics, and the people in Rome told him, okay, you know, cease and desist, until he found a good cardinal, until he got to talk with the Pope, and the Pope actually said, do start a new community, the Paulists, in the United States. But then when the issue of papal infallibility came, he thought, that's not going to fly in the United States. There's too much of a love for freedom, free thinking. We don't like kings. We don't like monarchs. We don't like hierarchy. And to declare a doctrine of papal infallibility is to kind of crown the idea of hierarchy with a power that will just turn so many Americans off, that we shouldn't do this. But the papal, the doctrine of papal infallibility did come in. So it sent him in a kind of a depression. He didn't know if, you know, what was he going to do next? How was he going to continue his mission? To his credit, he did accept, he accepted the doctrine of papal infallibility, but he didn't sort of like it, and he just had to, actually he said at one point after he accepted, he goes, okay, I'll accept it. Now I'm free to not worry about where my truth is coming from. And I thought that was a beautiful thing for him to say. I'm saying in our day and age today, many, many Catholics and good Christians are kind of going through that same crisis of faith. We can't believe in something that's intrinsically wrong, no matter what a government would say. And that's where these issues of the right to life are involved. And again, I repeat, it's just such a similar eerie repetition of history if you compare it to the slavery issue. Abraham Lincoln famously said at the beginning of the war, if I could save the Union by freeing some of the slaves and not freeing others, I would do it. If I could save the Union by not freeing any slaves or freeing all of them, I would do it. He definitely wanted to look at the moral issue of slavery as secondary, as malleable. We can build a successful nation with that problem unaddressed. Obviously, throughout the Civil War, he realized that that wasn't working. It's not going to happen. I just want our listeners to really appreciate it's very similar with the right to life issue. This is the moral issue of our day. And your expertise in economy and the economics. Nobody likes to be a slave. Nobody likes to be just the economic man or woman.
Right.
And I'm sure you try to do that with your lectures and your students and everything. But to see us as not just the communist worker.
Right.
Right. So I don't know, just with the minute or so left here, is there some other final words or comments you could make?
Yeah, I'll just say is that, you know, church teachings on sanctity of life issues are very solid, very strong. You know, we never need to abandon them. You know, I think we need to just, you know, evangelize well. I just think that those of the pro-life movement can never be discouraged. You know, we're in this for the long haul. You know, even with Roe v. Wade, we had some success getting abortion numbers down. We cut the abortion rate by 50% since 1980, even before Dobbs. So it's easy to get discouraged, but everything we do, education, service, legislation, does add up and does make a real difference in people's lives. So, you know, we may have had a setback in Ohio. I don't know what the future will hold, but we just stay with it.
For the long run, I really think that's the best advice at this point. We've got to see it as, in the long run, slow and steady, we chip away and bring back a deeper sense of moral righteousness, more right and wrong, in all aspects of our life. And we'll be able to stand before God with a much better conscience, right?
Yep.
God bless you. Thank you, Michael, for joining us.
Thanks
this is The Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ, WSFI, Catholic Radio, 88.5 FM. See you next time.
Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide the wind.